However, my name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Time Congregation, now south of 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 26, 2016, or it is History 26, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled The Beautiful Garden of Prayer. There's a garden where Yahshua is waiting. There's a place that is wondrously fair. For it glows with the light of His presence. It's a beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. And my Savior awaits, and He opens the gates. In the beautiful garden of prayer. There's a garden where Yahshua is waiting, and I go with my burden and care, just to learn from His lips words of comfort in the beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. And my Savior awaits, and He opens the gates to the beautiful garden of prayer. There's a garden where Yahshua is waiting, and He bids you to come meet Him there. Just to bow and receive a new blessing in the beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. Then my Savior awaits, and He opens again to the beautiful garden. World yesterday, today, and tomorrow. This reading from the Tract 12 by the V.T. Hardoff, and we're going to start with page 1. We're going to have to deal with the subject matter again, because we're dealing with Daniel 11, especially Daniel 11. Will Germany or England win? Okay, apparently this tract was written back during the World War in 1941. And that's when it was first copyrighted by V.T. Hodder. It says that we are living in a time in which we can't expect anything, but be sure of nothing. Therefore, all, including a like statement, statesmen, diplomats, and militarists will doubtless be surprised at just what will emerge from the present European conflict. At this moment, 1941, Hitler's dread legions are continuing their inexorable drive upon the world's mistress of the seas. And so far nothing has been able to withstand the fury of their onslaught, with the result that Europe stands in terrified amazement, and the whole world is alarmed wonderment at what is ahead, willing as was Nebuchadnezzar in his day to give almost anything to know. But the Yahweh, Elohim, the Father, alone knows the future. Now, this is not, I don't think it's completely accurate statement that Yahweh alone, when he took his son into confidence with him, there in Genesis 1:26, in the week of creation, he said to his son that he had already created in heaven, and he brought him to earth with him so he could be his co-creator with the Father. Are you going to tell me then the Father and the Son being close collaborators together in the future of the universe, that his Son would know also in advance the future? Okay, let's just think about that a moment. Say, the wise man of today can no more tell the future than could the wise man of the prophet Daniel's time, Daniel 2. If you think this an extravagant statement, then meet the challenge. Produce your cause, saith Yahweh. Bring forth your strong reason, saith the king of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them, and know the latter end of them, or declare us things for to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Isaiah 41:21-23. The one who foretold the rise and fall of the Babylon and of the nations succeeding it is the only one who knows what will be the outcome of the present distress of nations. Luke 21:25. For light then on this momentous question, now uppermost in every rational mind, we turn unto the Yahweh of the prophets, who bid us look to the writings of his ancient seers. There are all the world events that concern his son, Isaiah 45:11, are foretold in a pictorial mode. Now keep in mind that in Isaiah 45:13 and 45:2, he's talking about when he raised up Cyrus, my servant, he said, he raised him up in righteousness. And that's very interesting, to say the least. He said, thus saith Yahweh unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. So apparently your key, when Yahweh chooses someone, preordained by prophecy, he anoints him. He anoints him with the oil of gladness, the spirit of the truth. And he anoints him to understand truth, even though he wasn't born into the truth, per se. So, he said, for the world's history and the prophecy is recorded first in the literal terms, second in the parabolical terms, third in the typical terms, and fourth in the pictorial terms. For the sake of brevity and in the interest of the facilitating comprehension, precluding the possibility of sidetracking, this silent messenger presents his message in the pictorial mode. For the kingdoms that have gone down, the kingdoms that still exist, and the kingdoms that are yet to come, whose legislations involve Elohim's people, have been pictorially chronicled by both Daniel and John the Revelator. Now, in order that even the most skeptical and unbelieving mind be persuaded, the subject matter of this tract is introduced with the symbolism, whose prophetic import has already become history. A lion, a bear, a leopard, and a nondescript beast. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by the night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion, and he had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and he was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet of the man, and a man's heart was given unto it. And behold, another beast, a second like unto a bear, and it raised itself upon one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of fire. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given unto it. After this I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and he had great iron teeth. He devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Daniel 7:2-8. These four great beasts, said the angel, are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. Daniel 7:17. Prior unto Daniel's vision of these beasts, Nebuchadnezzar, king of the ancient Babylon, while in a quandary as to the duration of his kingdom, was shown in a dream a great image composed of the four metals. Its head was of gold, its breast and arms were of silver, its thighs of brass, its legs of iron, and its feet of iron mixed with miry clay. Interpreting the vision, Daniel said unto the king, Thou art this head of gold, and after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior unto thee, and another third kingdom of the brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. Now that would be Alexander the Great. He bore rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, that's Rome, pagan Rome. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay, and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, that there shall be in it of the strength of the iron. Forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, we know that clay represents the house of Israel, Jeremiah 18:6 tells us this, and in another place, I forget exactly where it was. Also in Isaiah 45:9 refers to this clay and the potter being Yahshua, and the clay being the house of Israel. And then also in Romans 9:20-21, it brings up this clay again, representing the house of Israel. It says, Nay, but O man, who art thou that repliest against Yahweh? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, Why hast thou made thee thus? Hath not the potter power over the clay, of the same lump, to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? That's even what it goes on to say there in Romans 9, that verse about 12, it was said unto her, Rebekah, the one that gave birth to Esau and Jacob, the elder shall serve the younger, meaning Esau, the firstborn, he shall serve the younger, Jacob. As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. So Paul was saying again to the Roman Gentiles, as it is written, okay, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. Where it was written in the Old Testament, apparently this is a cross-reference of Deuteronomy 21:15, Malachi 1:2-3, Matthew 10:37, and John 12:25. All right, enough for that. Let's now go back to our reading. It says that, getting back to our track, it says, I'll read that again. Prior unto Daniel's vision of these beasts, Nebuchadnezzar, a king of the ancient Babylon, while in a quandary as to the duration of his kingdom, was shown in a dream a great image composed of the four metals. Its head was of gold, its breast in iron, and arms were of silver, its thighs of brass, its legs of iron, and its feet of iron mixed with miry clay. Interpreting the vision, Daniel said unto the king, Thou art this head of gold, and after thee shall arise another kingdom, inferior unto thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so it shows right here the iron represents Rome, Catholic Church, and the clay represents the house of Israel. And in this prophecy, that would translate into the Catholic Church today having joined up and became the rulers of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the spiritual Israel of today. For the Seventh-day Adventist Church, they represent the clay. And the Catholic Church represents the iron. So the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Daniel 2:38-44. Plainly, the four metals of the great image symbolize, as do the four beasts, a succession of four kings in their respective periods. The feet, right and left, of iron and clay obviously represent two divisions of kings, righteous and leftist. In a fifth period, the time in which the Elohim of heaven shall set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, the toes of the feet indicate a multiplicity of kings in the both parties, the rightest and the leftest. Now what are we dealing with here today? Our rightists today are conservative Republicans. Our leftists are your liberal Democrats in our government today. So apparently you've always had the conservative and the liberals. Always, all down through the stream of time, you've had the two sides. You've had one side that wanted to be conservative and operate within their own means. You've had the other side that wanted to exploit and plunder and steal from the taxpayers take the taxpayers' money and use it any way they wanted to for their own political and personal gain. That's your democratic liberals. But the conservative right today, the Republicans, they have joined arms and arm with the Democrats in the House of Congress and the Senate of our country. They've all joined into one collusion against the ultra-conservative outsider, Donald Trump, today. But you have conservative insiders yet, and both Democrats and Republicans. You have actually conservatives in both parties today. And those conservatives are going to back Donald Trump. Okay? Those Republicans that are in their heart are really not conservative, they're nothing but liberal Democrats. And they proved that by linking up with the Democrats and voting with them against the conservative agenda. That's how you know who's who. When you've got the conservative agenda that wants to pare down government and conserve and save and so forth, then you know who's really conservative. But those Republicans that joins up with the Democrats to vote against these conservative bills that Trump and on the floor, then you know who's who. So it says in another symbolism, a ram and a three-phase goat, Daniel saw that the goat in its first phase, that of the great horn, that was represented by Alexander, the king of Greece, that came over the face of the earth like a bolt of lightning, and his ambition was to conquer the whole world. And he got to a certain place, and he was celebrating his victories up to that point, and he died in a drunken stupor at the age of 32 years old. And so four of his generals rose up and took over the kingdom of Greece, Alexander's kingdom, and divided into four sections. Three sections became known as controlled by the king of the north. One section became controlled by the king of the south. Okay, and so the king of the south is your Arab people, is your Muslim. They represent the king of the south. And the king of the north represents the Roman Empire and the Pope as the head of it. Today, that would translate into Pope Francis being the king of the north and Obama being the king of the south. And those two have already met together there in Daniel 11:27 at one table, telling lies at one table. They've already met together. This 2015, they met together, 2015, telling lies at one table right here in their headquarters at Babylon, Washington, D.C., antitypical Babylon. What we call antitypical Babylon at Washington, D.C., where Obama has this seat of authority, as the antitypical king of Babylon, king of the north came to see him, and it's because the king of the north said, this headquarters at Washington, D.C. is termed as the Second Vatican. Okay. And you know how you prove that? St. Peter's Basilica there in Rome, they set up with a dome of the rock. It's a dome for their capital. And St. Peter's Basilica, they set up, and Washington, D.C. is set up the same way with a capital with a dome on it. And that was finished in 1855, that capital construction of that dome. Consequently, all the states of the Union now, in the United States, they have a dome on top of their Capitol building as a replica of that St. Peter's Basilica. That's why this country is called the Second Vatican, Mystery Babylon. And that after the great horn broke off, Alexander passing away, four horns came up in his stead, the kingdom divided into four parts, and that finally from one of the four came a fifth, the exceeding great horn of Rome, Daniel 8, 9, and 20, and 21 to 23. Some think the exceeding great horn, the fifth, symbolizes Antiochus, who rule one of the four divisions, but this cannot be because the exceeding great horn coming out of one of the four symbolizes a fifth kingdom. Now, one of the four expanded, moreover, the term exceeding great, in contrast to the term great, denotes a greater kingdom than Alexander's. And as Antiochus' kingdom in its greatness, for it was not half so great as Alexander's, the theory is discredited. The Roman Empire is the one that was much greater than Alexander's, and therefore it alone answers to the symbolism in going south, then east, then on toward the Pleasant Land, the west, Palestine, that necessarily, which is the same thing as Israel, that necessarily went toward the four corners of the compass, which is just what Rome did. Daniel 8:9 says that the exceeding great horn came out of one of the four horns of the goat. But does not tell out of which one. Daniel 11:5, however, explains that one of the princes of the kingdom of the south was to have great dominion. Okay, so now this prince of the south is an Arab. He's a Muslim. Now keep that in mind. Explains that Daniel 11:5. Explains that one of the princes of the kingdom of the south was to have a great dominion. So Obama represents that prince of the king of the south, and he has a great dominion. He rules over the Muslim Brotherhood, which is his army that he has raised up and he's financing and organized, using the CIA and the FBI as the organizers of ISIS, secretly behind the scenes. Clandestine operation, if you will, by the Secret Service of this country. There's no less than about 17 Secret Service departments raised up by this country, going by different acronyms. Okay, so it says, this prince, therefore, is symbolized by the exceeding great horn, and it shows that it came from the horn which symbolized the Ptolemaic dynasty, the southern division. Here is shown what history fails to chronicle concerning the origin of pagan Rome. Now we see that though in Daniel 2 and 7 the names of the kings are not made known, they are revealed in Daniel 8, and as Daniel 2 and 8 corroborates Daniel 7, it follows that the four metals of the great image and the four great beasts are symbolical of the four ancient empires: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, and pagan Rome respectively. Now do you want to know why Turkey and Greece and all those other countries come into to play now in these latter-day prophecies? The following four maps show that history corroborates prophecy. And in my book I have a map here, an illustration of these four maps. And the first one shows Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar. So what the area he reigned over. Okay. Then the second map shows Media Persia of Cambyses that succeeded Babylon. And that would be, it shows a map here, the area it ruled over. And then it shows Grecia, Alexander's empire, that succeeded the Medes and the Persians. It shows all the territory he ruled over. And he ruled over more than Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar or the Medes and the Persians. He ruled over more. But not for long. And then it shows the Roman Empire ruling over everything north, south, east, and west of the Mediterranean Sea. The Mediterranean Sea is in the heart of all this land that Rome controls. So, that's very interesting because it says this great horn that came up after the great horn that represented Alexander the Great was broken off. And then it said the exceedingly great horn came up. That represented Rome, pagan Rome, and said it went east, south, west, and it came from the north. So it covered the four corners of the then known world. And the Mediterranean Sea was right in the heart of this body of land. And the Mediterranean Sea has one little inlet coming in from the Atlantic Ocean. It has one little inlet that's south of Spain. And it's on the northern border of Africa, which is Libya, and you have those places right there in Africa. Carthage, northern Africa. That's right on the southern, and the Mediterranean Ocean is on the coastline of Carthage, which is northern Africa. So the Mediterranean Sea supplies a lot of water to all of Europe and Africa on the north. Europe on the north, and Spain on the west. Okay, let's go on. It says that the feet and toes of the image, Daniel 2, being a mixture of iron and clay, forecast an empire which cannot cleave together. The clay, which represents the house of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel, causing it to break into parts into separate kingdoms, some large, some small, partly strong and partly broken. So when you have the Jewish people mingled among all these Gentile nations, then that great image that represents all these Gentile nations, that's what they represent. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome, these are all Gentile nations. And you got this clay, you got the Israelite people that have been scattered. The 10 tribes were scattered in 721 B.C. into the north, and to the Assyrian country in the north. And you had the two tribe kingdoms, Judah and Benjamin, that was taken into captivity by one nation, that was Babylon, there in 585 B.C. So about 121 years difference between the 10 tribes going into captivity under the Assyrian yoke, and the 2 tribes going into captivity under the Babylonian yoke. Now the Assyrians represented a conglomeration of more than one nation that took the 10 tribes into captivity, where the 10 tribes amalgamated their seed among the heathen, Gentile, they call them. Okay, so Gentiles, they have their Israelite, Hebrew Israelite blood flowing through their veins. Whether they realize it or know it or not, or want to accept that, it's a fact. And they are They have a harvest also for them in the end time. They're the second fruits harvest after the first fruits harvest. The house of Israel is put back together into one great kingdom. When the 10 tribes join the 2 tribes, they're in Ezekiel 37's prophecy. And you have the Gentiles, which come in then as the second fruits, brought in by the first fruits. The first fruits go out and get their brethren, the Gentile nation. You'll find that in Isaiah 66 prophecy. For those that escaped of Israel, they go to their brethren, to the nations, to the islands of the sea. And they gather, their Gentile brethren into a clean vessel and bring back to their this holy mountain, Mount Zion, in Israel, in Jerusalem. That's how the end time is going to, that's how it's going to close up. But you've got these modern day Gentile preachers that are preaching the secret rapture. They don't have no scripture or prophecy to back that up. But yet, I can give you prophecy after prophecy after prophecy, multitudes of prophecies from all of your prophets of the Old Testament, every prophet of the Old Testament, every patriarch that was ever called, starting in the Garden of Eden, chapter 3 of Genesis, first, for instance, is the first prophecy made about how the end is going to take place here in the end time. Okay, the house of Israel, Yahweh is going to raise up to bruise the serpent's head. Going to destroy the serpent here in the end time. Started with the prophecy in Genesis 3, 15 and 16. And, well, let's just go read it. And it's more clear for me to read it to you. I'm not like some of these preachers. They memorize myriads of verses, just many, many, many dozens of verses off the top of their head. And they think that that impresses the congregation because they, but if they only knew what they meant and really how to use them, that would be wonderful. But you know, I've been told all my life that I've got a photographic memory. And I've proved that time and time again, but I don't go around memorizing verses after verses and quoting them off the top of my head just to try to impress somebody. I know the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. I know how to use it, but I don't use it that way. Revelation 3:15. Genesis. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head. Now talking about this enmity of the woman, the pure woman, that's going to bruise the head of the serpent, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now it says, and thou, and it shall bruise his heel in thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Who is this thou? This is the purified woman in the last days that's going to put down the counterfeit false religion of Mystery Babylon in Revelation 17:5. Okay. The pure woman is found in Revelation chapter 12. The impure woman is found in Revelation 17, verse 1 through 5. Mystery Babylon, the woman. Unclean. All right. Now let's go ahead with our reading from our book, The World Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. Obviously, the scripture describes the present family of kings in their intermarriage state, mingled with the seed of men, coming as a result of the crumbling of pagan Rome. They make a fifth and multipartite empire. Thus, this prophetic picture clearly foretells that the rulers of the day, unable to cleave one to another, Daniel 2:42-43, are doomed to continual ruptures and hostilities among themselves. Okay. So now, what do we have today? That's what we have right now in the world. Go to Matthew 24 and read about the whole documentation of this, what's going on in the world today. The whole chapter of Matthew 24 deals with it. goes about 50 verses, seems like, about 50, 51 or 2 verses there. As widely accepted, the fourth beast, the two faces, one with the 10 horns, the other with the 7 horns, along with the little horn, Daniel 7, 7, and 8. When did the second face come into being? The first face came in at the cross, pagan Rome. When did the second face of pagan Rome come into being? In 538 A.D., when the 1,250-year policy began for the Inquisition of Rome. She got a name change in 476 A.D. to Ecclesiastical Rome from pagan Rome, meaning that she all of a sudden took on religion. Before she took on religion, she was called pagan, atheist, infidel Rome. But when she took on religion of the Christian church, when she intermingled with them in the first century, then she developed a counterfeit false religion, claiming to believe in Christ, only to teach that he never resurrected when he died on the... So they made a cross and put him hanging on a cross dead and hung it around their neck as a reminder that this Christ is dead and he's still dead. But the true Israel of today teaches that he's a high priest risen and he's operating in the heavenly sanctuary above. That's Hebrews 9. So it talks about this more than any. I mean, the whole book of Hebrews, for instance, talks about this more than anything. Alright, so it says, these four beasts coincide respectively with the gold, silver, brass, and iron of the great image. In this prophetic four-beast symbolism, along with its historical fulfillment, we see the passing political events and the consequent changing political status of the world from the time of the ancient Babylon on down to the time of the Christianized Rome. The great image, however, brings us down to the present, the time in which we find ourselves ruled by its toe kingdom, or its toe king. But as Daniel's series of the beast delineates but a part of the world's history, another series is necessarily completed. The only other such series is in the Revelation. The first symbol is, and which is the leopard-like beast. And now we're going to start a whole new series of beasts that represents a continuation of this one beast, pagan Rome, at the cross, Daniel's fourth beast that he saw in vision. The one that nondescript, indescribable. You don't know what he stands for, religion-wise, civil-wise. You don't know what it stands for. Well, today, that's what these here Protestant Gentile churches. They don't know what they don't know how to set up a foundation built upon a solid rock. They don't know how to do that. They've been led astray from the solid rock on how to build a foundation. So consequently, their foundation is built upon sand. And you know what happens when the tide comes in? Sandcastles go away. Sandcastles go away. That's what the Gentile world represents. A conglomeration of sandcastles. When the tide comes in, the water comes in, and washes up on the shore, there goes your sandcastle. Okay? But if you built it up on a rock, and let those tides come in, and dash up against that rock's still standing there and the tide goes back out. Alright. The leopard-like beast, and I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns. And upon his head the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. and they worship the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast, and who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things, and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against Yahweh, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints, and to overcome them, and power was given over him over all the kindreds and tongues and nations, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Now, when did this leopard-like beast, when did he make his appearance? We have to say in 17, after 1798, when the Catholic Inquisition and its prophecy of the 1260 years was over, from 538 to 1798, it was 1260-year prophecy that ended the Inquisition of the Catholic Church. And why is it called the Inquisition? Because they employed the Muslims, army of the Muslims, to be their fighting force, to destroy the Gentile nations around them, in Europe and around. Okay, and so that was what they call the Crusaders. I've got a book over here that talks about that. Tells a story about the Crusaders employing a Mohammedan, the Muslims, to be their fighting force. And the number one object was to go in and subdue Jerusalem, take over Jerusalem, and to plant his tabernacle there in the glorious holy mountain. That's in Daniel 11, 45. Okay. So it says right here, so it says, and he opened his mouth and blasphemed against Yahweh to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and him that dwell in heaven. Now, today we are able to put names, places, faces, and dates on these prophecies. Now I'm going to go back and reread this prophecy, starting with this leopard-like beast. And I'm going to give you some dates here. It says, and I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns. Okay, now when did this beast come out of the sea? I said after 1798. Actually, he made his emergence, I believe, in 1776, when the 13 colonies rolled up and enlisted their militia to fight against the British Redcoats and defeat them in the first Revolutionary War of this country. Okay, the rise of ecclesiastical Rome was in 538 A.D. That was the second phase of this fourth beast that Daniel saw. And it says, rise of the United States was in 1776 A.D. And that's Revelation 1311. Okay, and it says, the fall of ecclesiastical Rome and the termination of the 42 months, 1260 days, a day for a year, in prophecy. Then you have 1260 years from 538 to 1790. So the fall of ecclesiastical Rome, that second phase of that beast, that Daniel saw in vision, which would be number five, would be beast number five. Now the leopard-like beast that was being developed during this 42 months, the 1260 years from 538 to 1798, then he comes up out of that system. And so he emerges after 1798. And he would be beast number six. of the order of Daniel's vision, starting with the lion, the number one beast representing Nebuchadnezzar, the bear, number two beast representing Cyrus and Darius, kings of Medes and the Persian, the third, the leopard-like beast with the four heads and the four wings, representing Grisha, Alexander the Great, the fourth nondescript beast at the cross representing in 31 A.D. representing pagan Rome, and then in 538 A.D. The second phase of that fourth beast would be number five, ecclesiastical Rome, representing the Catholic Church and the Inquisition. And again, when I said Inquisition, means that Rome enlisted the Muslims, the Mohammedans, to come and be their executioners of all of these Christians that Rome had joined up with in the first century. Now Rome had developed into the second phase of this beast. During the Dark Ages, from 538 on, they enlisted their good neighbor's friend, the Mohammedan Muslims, the Arabs, to be their battle axe and be their executioners of those former Christians that Rome had formerly joined up with and accepted their religion in the first century. Now they're turning on them, using the Muslims to be their executioners, because the Muslims is just the right arm of the Catholic Church. Mohammed, the founder of the Muslim religion, was a Catholic monk, and he came out of the Catholic Church in the 7th century A.D. And he formed, and he wrote a book called the Quran. Well, the Catholic Church, they have the Catholic Catechism. Did you know the Catholic Church wrote the Catholic Catechism after Muhammad went and wrote the Quran? Muhammad had to put down all the counterfeit religion and their relics and stuff in his Quran. And the Catholic Church went and got their ideas from the Catholic, from the Quran, to write their Catholic Catechism. People don't know this. The world don't teach this, but I know this from my studies. And so there you have it. So when it comes time that the Catholic Church wants to execute all of those Christians that kept keeping the seventh-day Sabbath, and the Catholic Church had joined up with them, so when the Catholic Church got defeated and went down in 1798 A.D., and then 46 years later, the Seventh-day Adventist Church emerged as the spiritual Israel of the day and established the seventh-day Sabbath again as the correct day of worship. The Catholic Church then sent their antitypical Muslim army guard in the form of the Jesuit order. The Ignacia Iglesia formed in 1540. And where did this Ignacio come from? He came from the Muslims. And he formed the Jesuit order that succeeded the Muslim henchmen that the Catholic Church used to kill the Christians with. And now we have the continuation of that situation under a different banner and a different name. The Jesuit order of the Catholic Church, which is nothing but descendants from the Muslims. And today, who did Obama employ to go over and be this behind-the-scenes underground supervisor of his new Muslim Brotherhood army that he's raised up called ISIS? The FBI. The Jesuits. The Jesuits 100% control and are that represents the FBI and the CIA. The Jesuits 100% runs both those orders. And those are the two orders that's in the Middle East today that's organizing the ISIS and their operations, the Muslim Brotherhood. And what are they doing? They're killing Christians again, just like they did during the Dark Ages. Now, after 1798, then you had the little two-horned beast that comes into play here. And he's operating contemporaneously now with this leopard-like beast and this little two-horned beast in Revelation 13:11 that comes up after the leopard light beast had already come up. And now that the leopard light beast came up and has its headquarters here, it represents ecclesiastical Rome today. This leopard light beast now has its headquarters in Washington, D.C., which is called Mystery Babylon now. That's what they did up. And the little two-horned beast represents the United States in prophecy. In other words, the two horns on this little lamb-like beast that represents the United States country, the horns represents the Democratic Republican Party, the two-party system, and this country has the appearance of being lamb-like because it has Christian toleration for all religion. They appear to have that. And they put the Statue of Liberty out there in the harbor of Manhattan as the people come from the east across these waters to New York. First thing they see is that woman standing there with that torch held high and says, "Give me your huddled masses, bring them here. We'll protect you and we'll take care of you and we'll give you religious freedom from persecution." And so it's like a magnet. It's drawn all of these ethnic groups from all over the world to come to the United States because they want the freedom and they want to get on the charity bandwagon and let the federal government of the United States dole them out their daily needs, and all they want to do is just. But the government says, "We'll do that, but we're going to take over you and enslave you and put you into bondage." When you thought all the time you were coming to a land of freedom, you're coming to a land of bondage. Okay. All right. This brings the end of our study. This is our contact at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on the audio archives. We're going to close to the song. But first, I want to tell you that we're going to continue on this here leopard light beast. Revelation 13 is going to be our study for the next for our next study. We're going to continue on with the whole chapter of Revelation 13 and going into end of Revelation, no doubt, of chapter 22. Let the heavenly light shine through. The song that I wrote, Elijah David. Well, you would not have known about a wonderful yarn if he hadn't created you. And you would not have known about his vast creation and all he could do. So join me on the yarn, remember to pray, let the heavenly light shine through. And Yahweh in His mercy, when it comes again, we'll have a heavenly home for you. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And Yahweh in His mercy, when it comes again, we'll have a heavenly home for you. There would not have been enough creation of earth if Yahweh had never come down. Broke the bird of creation, heard in the world that is spinning around. They spoke the word in the night, and with his mind it from the night. And y'all saw that his work was good, created by his mind. Let the heavenly light shine through, let the heavenly light shine through. And y'all in his mercy when he comes, and then we'll have a heavenly home. Well, you climb up on a mountain and you look around. There's a green valley below. There's a moon up above that's shining with love. There's a peaceful river that flows. There's the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and all that heaven can spare. And to think that this is just a glimpse of what's awaiting over there. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And Yahweh in His mercy, when He comes again, we'll have a heavenly home for you. And Yahweh in His mercy, when He comes again, we'll have a heavenly home for you.